Hello, Squawker Talker listeners, and welcome to 2019, the first episode of the new year, and we're going to get stuck into FA Cup and everything else that we're looking forward to in this year. Joining me on the first episode of 2K19 is Chief Writer at Squawker, Mohammed Butt. How are you?
I'm a bit under the weather, but, you know, still enjoying it. Good weekend of FA Cup football, La Liga. Yeah, everything's looking good, man. It's a brand new year, brand new day.
New year, new you.
Well, no, I'm pretty much the same. But, you know, it's otherwise it's good.
And also being the exact same as they were last year is Mr. Sam Long joining us on the podcast. How are you, Sam?
Very well, thank you, Jake. Good to be here.
Did you have a good break?
I did indeed.
Did you tuck in to the FA Cup feast this weekend?
Absolutely did.
Third round always serves up some brilliant memories. And we'll go straight into it with the number 107, which is representative of where Barnet FC are currently in the English league pyramid, which I always quite love that. That only comes out of the FA Cup, doesn't it? The league pyramid where everyone has a place. And Barnet are 107th. But they served up a pretty big giant killing this weekend. Was it the biggest of them all?
No. I mean, obviously, they're not there.
You know, and next question.
No, but obviously, they're from the National League, so it's amazing. Oh, my God, they beat Championship Sheffield United, who are playing very well. Sheffield United 23rd in the pyramid.
Yes.
And so there's an 84-place difference. It's a huge difference. It's very impressive. But for me, the biggest, the more impressive giant killing was Newport beating Leicester, because Newport are in League 2, so they're 81st. They're 13th in League 2, so they're 81st
in the
pyramid.
English Football Pyramid Podcast.
Yes, and Leicester are 7th in the Premier League, so there's a difference of 74 places. So it's not that far removed from Sheffield United Barnet in terms of distance. And Leicester are in the Premier League, and they're a much better side. Now, I know it was their B team that went out there, but Leicester's B team still has a lot of players in Damari Gray and Andre. They came off the bench. There was a lot of talent in the team, and it was incredible to watch. Because the thing is, it's so strange that Klopp World rested so many of his players, because Leicester are seventh. They're not going to get relegated. They're not realistically, they're not in danger of dropping out of the race for the Europa League spots. It's so strange that he rested so many of his players for this game when it's like, you know,
They're prime candidates to have a cup run.
Yeah,
aren't they?
They really are. They're not going to get relegated. They might win the Europa League, might finish Europa League spots, might not. They've got really good players that can, on their day, beat anybody, as we've seen over the Christmas period. They beat Man City, beat Chelsea. So there's obviously talent there. They can do it. Why would you not go for a cup run? He said he rotated players against a side that has done this before. Last year, Newport beat Leeds in the third round, 2-1. Forced Spurs to a fourth round replay. By drawing 1-1 at home and then losing. They lost to White Hart Lane. So Newport have done this before. They clearly have a penchant for giant killing, or at least giant bothering.
Yeah.
And it was just like, why would you even take the risk? It's so strange to do this. Like, you send out your first team. But you know what? Credit to Newport. They really, really played well. They deserve their win. And I hope to see them get a nice, juicy rat tie in the fourth round. And yeah, let's see if we can get another. Maybe take one of the big boys down to Rodney Parade, you know?
I think, just on that Barnet, I think, again, I know I sort of asked you straight away which was better, but one person from me looking from afar, I didn't get to catch many of the FA Cup this weekend because Squawker was at the Star Sixes, which was pretty cool itself. But I was seeing a lot of love for Shaq Coulthurst, the Barnet striker. And a lot of Sheffield United fans were just like, why are we not buying him? So the FA Cup in itself can be a window where you play against those bigger sides.
It's a fantastic leveler. Like, you know, who remembers Roy Sandow, you know, the legendary moments like that. And like you said, I mean, you know, the Sheffield United are like, why don't we sign him? Because, you know, you find gems of talent in the cup games. Now, obviously, it can also be a bit of an illusory thing because it's like,
we play
well in one game or whatever. But at the same time, it does show a certain mentality. If not the consistency, it shows a certain ability to cope with a level, with a mentality where you're
and make the step up as
well. Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Like, oh, they can handle this. Maybe they can handle more.
So we're obviously recording before the final tie takes place, Liverpool Wolves. But if you were going to say all these low-ranked teams have got through, and which one do you think, just what from the games that we've watched this weekend, has the best chance of making a serious...
I think, firstly, it's good to have a non-league story in there at this stage of the competition. We're hearing lots of moans and groans about the magic of the cup sort of fizzling out, people playing weakened teams. So it's good to actually see some representatives from the lower leagues, you know, pushing on and actually challenging their sort of bigger brothers, as it were. In terms of who's going to go the furthest, using a massive cliche, it really is the luck of the draw. If you're going to pick up if you're going to be drawn against, you know, a League One or a Championship club, then you've got every chance of making it through to the next round, because I think it's really understated how important it is to be playing regularly together when the Championship or even the Premier League teams play weekend teams that have got youngsters in it, people who are short of fitness, or even people who are a bit frustrated to play. If you're coming up against a team who knows exactly what they're doing and they've played week in week out with each other, then that can be a real advantage.
I mean, yeah, look at Man United; they were really bad against Reading. Like, and if it'd been a better team than Reading, they might have been knocked out. You know, they weren't very good at all.
Maybe Barnet will be fancying them next round. Then,
well, there you go.
Barnet 15th in the Conference Premier, Newport County are 13th in League Two, Oldham 10th in League Two, Gillingham 19th in League One. So that you're pretty much the same level there. So
AFC Wimbledon also in there, might I add.
Well, are they going to be the ones that go the furthest?
I would put my money on no.
There we go.
But no, I'm actually back in Oldham, knocking on the door of the League Two playoffs. Caretaker boss Pete Wilde has come in and obviously led them to this victory over Fulham.
He had a wild celebration as well, didn't he?
I mean, surely he's going to get the job full time now.
Yeah,
what more can you do?
At that level, yeah, as you said, approaching playoffs and giving fans a memory like that, he's put himself in a good place to extend his stay.
Mm.
But someone who's not extending their stay in English football is Senor Cesc Fabregas, who 501 games and out, it looks like, given that emotional farewell at Nottingham Forest, decided to miss a penalty in his last game, which won't do well for his image, but looking back at Cesc Fabregas, the Premier League player, Cesc Fabregas in English football, we asked Mendieta at the Star Sixes what his sort of opinion of Fabregas was, and he said, living legend of Premier League football and the Spanish national team. Mm. He said maybe he was unlucky in the fact that Cesc Fabregas' peak had so many good midfielders that he didn't get as much recognition or game time as he did. But false nine Cesc Fabregas was a thing for a while, and he was pretty good there. But Arsenal, obviously, box-to-box midfielder. Chelsea became just sort of deep-lying playmaker. First, fastest player to reach 100 assists. The only player with 10-plus assists in six different seasons.
Cesc Fabregas is an absolute, unequivocal, no-caveats legend. Like, it's because his reputation has taken a hit, I think, in part because he fell out with Conte, and so he didn't play as much as he should have done. Obviously, and the other thing was, of course, he betrayed Arsenal fans by even going to Chelsea. But I think the main problem he has had, Fabregas has had, is that he fell out with Conte. Like the last couple of years, he hasn't had a swan song. If you think about all these great playmakers like Iniesta, Pirlo, David Silva, even, I'm not saying he's on that level, but like you look at in terms of achievement, he is. But in terms of reputation, you look at what made them stand out is the fact that when they got old and they got a little bit not as good as they were before, everyone started heaping praise on them because they were playing every week.
Yeah,
Cesc has not been since he got to that age, that period of his career. He hasn't been playing every week. He's been a sub. Mm. He's been this. He's been that.
But then he was so good at such a young age.
Yeah,
that I think it's. It's quite tough to criticise him. Oh, he's getting old. So what? He's 31 now.
No, it's not criticism. I think it's more
Mo's saying that like people at 31 were given the chance to just dominate a midfield from deep.
Yeah,
and he arguably was going to do that, and then Jorginho came in. So now we don't get to witness the greatness of Fabregas every day.
There is no. He doesn't get the farewell tour. Basically, I mean that's a weird way to put it. But like you look at Pirlo. Pirlo was amazing at Milan. Absolutely amazing. Yeah. Went to Juve and then didn't play particularly better than he did at Milan. It had a much easier time of it thanks to the way Juve was set up. But Pirlo's the greatest midfielder ever. Yeah. Oh. And Iniesta got more praise when he was bad than when he was absolutely amazing. Mm. Which is and that's just the way. Paul Scholes is another great one. You know, was way better than he was in the mid 2000s. Only really got praised around the turn 2010 and so on and forth when he came out of retirement. So Fabregas hasn't had that. Whether he gets that or not going to Monaco, I don't know. But he's phenomenal. The success of the Spanish national team. Okay, look, he's not as good as Xavi and Iniesta never was. All right, fair enough. But what he contributed to the Spanish national team was huge. He was constantly in the Euro 2008 coming off the bench, helping them seal wins. You know, really important there. At the World Cup, he played a huge part in helping them secure wins. Got the assist in the final. The only moment, apart from the finish, the only moment of serenity in that entire move, if you watch the move, Bill, it's quite so funny for a team so precise. That move was a comedy of errors until Fabregas's pass and Iniesta's shot that won the World Cup for Spain. False nine, as Jake said, in the year 2012, which shouldn't have worked, but did. He out-sprinted Giorgio Chiellini and injured Chiellini's hamstring in the 2012 final for the opening goal. If you watch it back, Cesc beats someone in a sprint. It's incredible.
Well, again, that Mendieta said, like, although he didn't get the sort of the, yeah, as you said, the complete...
Huge role.
But he was so decisive he in was so many big
games. More decisive than David Silva. This is the thing. Everyone's going, because, I mean, David Silva's having his swan song now. Yeah. And justifiably, obviously, he's an amazing player. I'm not criticising him, but he's having his swan song. Everyone's showering him with praise right now. But Cesc was way more important to Spain than he ever was. You know, it's sort of mark against him that he basically didn't succeed at Barcelona, but that's just because he wasn't as good as Xavi Iniesta. Mm. He's a phenomenal player, and I think in Arsenal he was unreal from a very young... I still remember a game, I can't remember who it was, Arsenal played at home, and he was on the bench because he was injured, and they brought him on and he scored two goals.
Villa.
Yeah. And then got injured again, and it was just like, well...
Well, that, I was going to say about being decisive, that sort of towards the end of his Arsenal career where they were so reliant on him.
Yeah.
And they had to keep being like, we don't want to use Fabregas, but we're going to use Fabregas. Oh, thanks, Fabregas. It was sort of like...
And he was, and then...
And to be captain that young...
Yeah.
And be like a foreign, young to, foreign
to
captain
To be able to
well.
Handle the pressure. Because this is the thing, we look at Arsenal, Jose Reyes, right? It was another really gifted young Spaniard, came to Arsenal when he was young. He couldn't handle the pressure of getting kicked about and all this stuff. Fabregas could. Fabregas was a very resilient character.
He kicked others as well.
He's very dirty player.
He had a real mean streak, didn't he?
Yeah, when he had to... And, you know... And he had this great young phase, right? He went to Barcelona, played some very good football, but didn't quite settle in, and, you know, whatever.
He almost went to Barcelona almost at the end. It was like he was a sort of nearly man, because he went after they beat Man United in the Champions League final. It was like he almost just missed the boat by one season to be part of that great Barca team.
He went to be part of what Guardiola was trying to do, is evolve the Barcelona side. And what happened was Guardiola left after 1 year. That was basically the problem. If Guardiola had stayed, they would have carried on evolving tactically. But then Guardiola left, so it was just like... And Tito Villanova obviously couldn't evolve side because he got cancer. So it became a sort of trying to fit Cesc into a team which didn't have room for Cesc, because it wasn't trying to evolve tactically to include a fourth midfielder. Do you know what I mean? And that was really what held Cesc back. If Pep had stayed, or if Tito hadn't gotten sick, Cesc would have been a huge success at Barcelona, because talent-wise, it wasn't an issue. It was just fitting him in tactically, which they never could do.
Do you think... So, obviously, David Silva, again, has been putting in some serious displays. And then I saw a lot of another wave of, why isn't David Silva considered one of the best Premier League sort of imports?
Yeah.
Just because he doesn't have the goals of Henry, or he's been here longer than Drogba and stuff like that. So... Yeah. You think that Fabregas's reputation, I think that's a good point. If he was playing now in this Chelsea midfield, when he's played this season, he's been hot and cold, but you see glimpses of that absolute like playmaking genius.
Yeah, if he was given the confidence of Maurizio Sarri to be the guy, you know, he'd be transformative. He could be absolutely spectacular. You know, it's just, and then, I mean, and just to look at it, he's had this period at Barcelona, look at this, he's come to Chelsea, he's won two Premier League titles.
Yeah, and
he was so good that first season.
He was essential.
That's what I mean, it was, Arsenal fans were like, because it was, Arsene Wenger had said, well, we have Ramsey, we have Ozil, we have a good team. Yeah. It's not that we don't want Fabregas, it's just that I can't play him.
Yeah.
And then that was fair enough, and then he went to Fabregas, he went to Chelsea and was, as you said, unreal. But, so I think we're all in agreement that in terms of legendary status among English football. Oh, yeah. I think he is. He definitely is.
It's just.
I think what sort of separates him, that he's almost going to be like a neutrals legend, a Premier League legend, rather than being remembered as a legend for a particular club.
Well, yeah, because it's split between two clubs. But also, he had an ignominious end. It's kind of like Ashley Cole in a way. Ashley Cole is another Premier League legend who's not going to get the love he deserves, because he was seen as a bit of a, a
snake.
Exactly.
Well, the Fabregas was the rat, wasn't he?
Exactly. And supposedly. More than anything else, it's the ignominious end. You know, it's like going out in January on a free after, missing a penalty in the FA Cup. Yeah, it's not. It's 501 league games should be huge. He should be going out. You know, they should be really thanking him. He was essential to winning them that first title under Mourinho. He was so important to Chelsea's recent history. And Arsenal's, he was a massive part of Arsenal's history. I think Arsenal's fan, once they get over,
you know, Chelsea, I think there's a wave anyway now of like realizing that being able to claim sort of yeah. breaking through a talent like yeah. that is, I think Arsenal fans will remember that fondly. But so looking forward now for Fabregas, as you mentioned earlier, Sam, he's 31. He's not, people like Xabi Alonso and Pirlo are playing until 36, and they were a similar skill set at least. Is this obviously reuniting with Omri, and that you can see something particular there would be a reason why. A 3-year contract as well is nice at that age. But why would he go there, basically?
I mean, I would have expected him to have had offers from at least other Premier League clubs.
It's the wages, isn't it? He's probably on a fairly high wage. And I mean, you look at what it is in Monaco, it's money, taxes and weather. Like, he's probably getting paid a good deal. Obviously, like I said, 3-year contract. Taxes are very low in Monaco and the weather is nice. It's a great place to live.
Yeah, it's not a bad move. But again, we're talking about that sort of establishing himself as... You don't want to become a forgotten talent.
Well, Omri will make him the general, though, won't he? That's the thing.
Yeah, Omri, but Monaco are their worst league start in history. But within 50 years, 2 points off the bottom. They've just bought 36-year-old Naldo in from Schalke to shore up the defence. Fabregas is the next arrival. That's two... To be fair, Omri's had to play teenage 11s pretty much, so I can understand bringing in experience, because I imagine Fabregas will play a similar role to how Moutinho operated under Jardim. They're, again, playmakers that will play in the midfield too, maybe, and be able to dominate the games. But it just seems like, given Monaco's status now, he's not going to be in the Champions League next season. He's just going to...
Just fizzle out almost, isn't it? That's what it feels like. I guess Omri's pull... Has had a big impact on
perhaps Cesc. There's a pathway to coach and be and perhaps, work and, yeah. and reunite that duo there.
I think there's great, or there must be, I think there must have been a continuity of, like, they promised Cesc that yes, Omri will stay in charge next season. If they get relegated, whatever happens, Omri.
Well, if they get relegated though, Cesc Fabregas playing in second tier of French football.
There must have been a that's what I'm saying. There must have been a promise that this coaching staff will say there's a project here. So even if the worst happens, which I don't think it will, if they're bringing in Cesc and bringing in Naldo, I think that will solve a lot of their issues, give them a lot of experience and stability. Cesc has won a lot. He knows he should know how to lead a locker room. Whether or not he does, we'll find out now. Naldo is a very experienced, very reliable campaigner. If nothing else, he'll help be a good example for the younger lads and bring them stability. Whether or not he plays well or not himself is...
Well, yeah, he was one of the best performers for Schalke last season. Yeah. And it was funny because he had the second most aerial duels won and the second most clearances in the league. Obviously, he got bombarded and won everything. Yeah. The only person that was ahead of him was Salif Sane, Senegalese centre-back, who Schalke then signed and replaced Naldo.
Yeah.
So the only way they could upgrade was by signing him, and they seemed to do that. And Naldo, out of favour, has now joined. But moving away from Fabregas himself... Chelsea as well, really interesting this January.
There's so much.
They've already got Pulisic, which I think it didn't go under the radar when it's done, but because of the pace of the FA Cup and fixtures now coming in, it's sort of like, right, okay, let's put that out of the way. He's not coming until the summer.
Yeah.
But that was a...
It's a very strange thing because it's...
Bold move.
It's a huge get in money ways because obviously he's very talented and very marketable being an American. There's obviously a huge untapped market in the USA, he's potentially the first world-class American footballer. So
Clint Dempsey would have something to say about that.
But at the same time, it's very frustrating because Callum Hudson-Odoi is sitting right there and is very not the same, but similar.
You have to be very careful, Mo, because Chelsea fans have convinced themselves that Pulisic will be playing with Callum Hudson-Odoi.
I mean, look, if Eden Hazard and Willian both leave in the summer, then maybe. But Sally has shown a reluctance to use... I mean, I know he played him at the weekend and he played very well.
Yeah, two assists in the FA Cup.
But, you know, it's Sally has shown a reluctance to use Hudson-Odoi thus far in games that matter. Whether or not that's just for this season and he's betting in, I don't know. I mean, I hope so. But because...
But that's why this deal for me, Dortmund were laughing, I think, because not only has Pulisic been displaced by Sancho, really, they've also got Jacob Brun-Larsen that plays on the wing, young Danish midfielder. They've got Sergio Gomez, who is another brilliant talent from that age group of Jadon Sancho. He was in the Spain under 17 team and is great. So Dortmund have locked down talent in those positions. Pulisic for 58 million. Dortmund, and they get to keep him for 6 months.
I think Dortmund have realised that if you buy these very talented young wingers when they're young, you can make an easy return on investment because they will always... Young wingers, I think, are starting to, especially with the way Dortmund play, it's easy for them to shine.
Yeah.
Like, the system makes it easy for them. And I think what you
counter
get...
If you can carry the ball and you're quick, you're going to look great in that Dortmund team.
It boils down to them actually playing their players.
Yeah, doesn't it? I know.
They're giving them the chance.
Yeah, but well, Pulisic is the example, isn't it? That was a guy from Hershey's chocolate.
Yeah, because imagine if he had signed for a Premier League club when he signed for Dortmund. Where would his development be now? He'd be maybe 15 Premier League.
Yeah. The reason he's further ahead of Hudson-Odoi in terms of development is because he's been played
at 2 years older.
Yeah, well, he's 2 years older, but that's what I mean. Literally, when he was 18, they were playing.
Yeah.
Like Hudson-Odoi's 18, they're not playing. Well, that's the difference.
When the move was made, I sort of said like Pulisic is worth 58 million to Chelsea because Dortmund have played him, whereas Hudson-Odoi could be. I emphasise and say, Chelsea fans, if you believe that next year Sarri's going to sign a striker that he wants and flank him with two under 21 players, then brilliant, that would be great. But that means Hazard's going, and that means that Pedro and William will be phased out. And Sarri, given how good Pedro is still, to an extent, you're not going to...
Just injury prone, really.
Yeah, he's going to play, and it would be a complete removal from Sarri's... What we know about Sarri's football, for him to use Pulisic and Hudson-Odoi together next season, feel it was going to be bold. And if he does it, I'll be happier than most people.
Yeah, it would be wonderful.
Would be brilliant to watch. I just feel... With Bayern Munich circling around Hudson-Odoi.
Well, Bayern have seen the trend, haven't they? They've seen that Reece Nelson, Jadon Sancho, they're like, oh, okay. We need to get on this because these young English wingers are very good.
And Leipzig wanted Rian Brewster before his knee injury, who obviously plays up front. But, people are basically saying that under-17 England team,
pretty good.
We need to buy players from that.
Basically,
Phil Foden is obviously stayed at Man City and doing well. Get his first goal at the Etihad. Hudson-Odoi is... the one that's undecided. Sancho's been great, and Brewster obviously unfortunately got that injury.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah,
but with Liverpool selling Solanke, it sort of removes one, although Brewster's younger, it removes one player.
Yeah, there's lots
getting of 19 million for Solanke, by the way, was...
Oh, that... Look, there's crazy. there's so much talent around in young English players, and it'd be a shame if English coaches and English clubs didn't give them the appropriate chances. Hudson-Odoi is... Because the thing is, in pre-season when Hazard wasn't there, he was so good in the Hazard role. And it was like screamingly obvious that, okay, this is your backup. Obviously, Hazard's your guy because he's world class.
But he's now moved up front.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. So when Hudson-Odoi should have been playing Europa League every game, should have been the focus of the Europa League side.
He has played in that, to be fair to them.
No, I know, but Willian's obviously had more of that. And then once you move Hazard up front in this change that you've had to make, then Hudson-Odoi surely comes in. But, you know, he's preferred Willian. Willian is more reliable, more of an experienced guy.
Well, Willian's not reliable, according to every Chelsea fan.
By reputation, he is, but he's not played well. And I think, really, Chelsea missed a trick. If Barcelona really were offering 50 million for him, Chelsea missed a massive trick by not doing that, because that would have been such a coup for Chelsea to get that. But
I don't think it's a fluke, though, that Hudson-Odoi is sort of suddenly starting to get minutes now that this sort of interest is circulating him, because it will make him think twice. Like, if he's coming on, he gets assists, he starts to get a bit of sort of hype in the English press, he'll think twice about, oh, maybe I could stay. Chelsea that are dangling the carrot in front of him.
Yeah.
I think with Hudson-Odoi as well, his major asset to Chelsea is that, again, as you said, he played left wing in pre-season, and that's where he played for the youth teams, where he absolutely destroyed everyone that he came up against. But for England under-17, he played as a number 10, and it wasn't a playmaker number 10. Sancho played on the left, Foden was actually on the right, Brewster up front, Hudson-Odoi was this just off the ball movement and linking up with each of those players individually.
Yeah.
And he can play on the right as well, because he's got electric speed and can be old fashioned.
It's incredibly, but I mean, both his assists at the weekend came playing on the right, old school, beat your man, cross the ball.
So
he's such
the value to Chelsea, in the sense that they have a fluid front three, but they all have a specific role.
Yeah.
Hudson-Odoi could play... He has played false nine, and obviously Sarri will never play him there. But my point is that you've got a player here who can play every single position that you're trying to establish with Sarri's tactics. So why would you let him go? He's worth more than 30 million to them, I think.
It is very strange. And I mean, if they sell him, I don't know if they will, but if they do it would be a massive shame. You know, like we said at the start, just to wrap it up, honestly, the difference between Pulisic and Hudson-Odoi is the fact that Pulisic was trusted at 18. Trust Hudson-Odoi at 18. He will become a Chelsea legend. And he loves Chelsea as well. That's the other thing. He's homegrown.
Just winding down. Next, the final bit on the FA Cup is... So we've spoken about the Minnows killing Giants. We've spoken about Fabregas's farewell. Two Giants that did the killing themselves were Spurs and Man City.
Oh.
14 goals dished out with no reply.
Yeah.
Trouncings, really.
Spurs in particular just seemed like
Pochettino's comments were great, weren't they? I needed to bring Harry Kane on because he's an icon in English football, and fans wanted to see him. Bought him on and he scored straight away.
You bring Harry Kane on.
Yeah. And so Son was absolutely unreal in that game.
Oh, he was incredible.
His goal was so good. He's like, is he going to shoot? Yeah, he's going to shoot.
He's obviously going soon, so they're trying to get as much juice out of him as possible. But do those performances make Spurs and Man City favourites for the FA Cup?
No, they just means that, oh, look, they're very good teams. They had very easy draws and they're very good teams and they made it look very easy as a result.
So who early predictions based on what we've seen? I know Liverpool are playing, obviously, after we've recorded, and they'll obviously want to make a claim. Wolves is tough, yeah.
Is tough, especially because he probably rotate. Klopp always does. Mm. But no, I would say favourites for the FA Cup. It's hard to rule out Man United.
What a sound that is, by the way. We need to clip that out on its own.
It's hard to rule out Man United because they'll get knocked out of the Champions League by PSG, right? So the season draws out, they'll be like, oh, we need to pick me up. Let's win the FA Cup. It's nice. Everyone likes it.
Well, Van Gaal did that.
Yeah. Ollie's going into the season anyway, so he'll go out on a high. No, I would say Spurs. I think this is going to be the one. He'll finally do it. I think he's sort of clocked that he has to win a trophy just to shut the plebs up, if nothing else. I think he'll do it. Spurs are a phenomenal side.
Well, he needs to leave Spurs with one trophy at least, doesn't he? If rumours are to be believed.
Well, I mean, exactly. He's got on the way out. Maybe he'll finally win one and be like, peace.
Yeah. Sam, do you think Spurs?
No, I got a sneaky feeling that Arsenal are going to do it. Unai Emery's got a solid record in cup competitions.
That is a rogue, but also not a rogue shot at all, actually.
But I think, this, similar to you, Mo, in that the other big sides will go far in the Champions League, and that will take priority over the FA Cup, and it will allow Arsenal to take advantage.
But Arsenal are surely looking at the Europa League as their only way into the Champions League. So if they were going to prioritise a cup competition, Unai Emery's... The FA Cup was Wenger's competition as well. He's got as many FA Cups himself as Chelsea have in their history, or one of the big teams. True. I think it's Spurs. But.
Emery's post-match comments after Blackpool, and he was really talking about that. Oh, we've won it 13 times, and that just made me think that he is going to focus on it. He's done his research. He likes cup competitions, and he's really going
to
take.
He wants to continue that Arsenal tradition. Yeah, that's a rogue shout in terms of, because we've seen them against the big teams this season. Obviously, a win and a defeat against Spurs, if they met them again, and a fourth London derby would be pretty good for this season. But I think Man City, although I don't feel them as sort of cup team, they do have that incredible style of play that can just blow people away. Yeah. So. To use your cliche earlier as well, if Man City get a nice little draw, you don't really want to play them in a final.
Because, on the other hand, we could have a really exciting draw today and, you know, four of the top six are drawn against each other and then it's the quarterfinals, it's opening up a lot more.
Again, to plug the Squawker Star Sixes content, Wes Brown thinks that FA Cup is Man United's to win as well, which is quite interesting. But you would also expect him to say that, being a former Man United player.
he's a bit biased.
Yeah, I think that's good as an FA Cup wrap-up. And the
shout out Joe Willock, though. Two goals for Arsenal.
Doing well. Well, he played a really young side, Emery, so he got to rest a lot of players. And also, Lacazette got a little sing-song, which he was pleased about.
So did Carl Jenkinson.
Yeah. Which is, considering how poor Lichtstein has been, Jenkinson might be the biggest comeback story of 2019.
Jenkinson failing his way back into the Arsenal side.
The battle between him and Ramsey to be the last man standing.
Yes. Well, it's pretty going to be Jenkinson, isn't it? With Ramsey might even go in January. Reports I've seen, Arsenal get a bit of money, which is what we're going to talk about for this last part of the podcast, is a bit of transfer talk, which... now we're actually allowed to do, because it's in January.
Hooray!
People are making signings already.
It's my favourite
time. So we can't just speculate. We have to speculate. We're forced to, obliged to talk about it. So Ramsey, midfielder, it looks like Juventus for him. But the other sort of midfielder...
That is a very Juventus move, by the way.
Well, we picked him out as the sort of suggest when that happens. Yeah. It was like, oh, free transfer. Who loves those? The serial Serie A winners. But another midfielder that's in demand because of his talent, but maybe not his attitude, is Adrien Rabiot for PSG, who's expected to join Barcelona as a free agent in the summer. Is this sort of just a revenge play? Is he good enough for this Barcelona team?
I think it's a very smart play because he's free and he's very good, which is two nice combinations.
Ticks
you want
two
a footballer.
Boxes.
Yeah, no, but you look, he actually ticks a lot of boxes. If you look at what he can do, he's a central midfielder, can play defensive midfield in a pinch, although he doesn't like doing it. You know, he's left-footed but useful with his right. He's tall, but not like slow, not bulky, not like Busquets is tall, but really slow. Rabiot is tall, very quick across the ground, technically adept, a good passer, good dribbler. He can dribble out of pressure, which is always very important if you're playing for Barcelona. You've got to be able to beat the press. So he's press-resistant in that way, in a way that, say, even Rakitic really isn't. You know, he can escape the press. He's got a big potential for big games. He was excellent against Real Madrid last year when PSG were knocked out of the Champions League. He was the only PSG player that really stood up in that game, scored a goal. So he picks most of the boxes. He obviously Eric Abidal has gone there because he's French, so he knows Rabiot, probably has connections there. And it's, to me, it's a very savvy move. If I'm Barcelona, actually, I'm asking PSG, hey, can I pay 10 million, take him off your hands now? Because they're not going to play him. He's been exiled at PSG because of his mother's, him and his mother's antics, read their contract, which, whatever. So PSG aren't going to play him. So for me, if I'm Barcelona, I've seen Arda Turan and Alex Vidal kind of ruin their Barcelona careers by basically spending 6 months sitting around doing nothing. I'm not letting Rabiot do the same thing. If I'm Barcelona, I'm like, hey, we'll buy you now 10 million. You spend the first 6 months just getting to know everyone, playing a game here and there. He's a phenomenal player. He fills a lot of boxes. It now makes their need to sign Frenkie de Jong less. Like, they're still going to go for him, still going to go hard for him. But now, if they don't get him, it's not a massive disaster.
Again, Ronald de Boer doesn't think Frenkie de Jong is actually ready for that massive move and thinks, obviously, Ajax won't say no again to an £80 million offer, which is sort of rumoured. But if what, and De Boer's still working at Ajax, so you take
I would agree with him.
I think Rabiot is that sort of stopgap.
Yeah, he is, and he's a bit better than a stopgap.
No, he is. But I'm saying you as you said, you fill that need of what you need in a midfielder by getting Rabiot, and then that means there's less pressure if Frenkie Jong were to be signed. Also,
he can come in. This
means Barcelona are starting to stockpile a lot of midfielders as well.
Well, this is the thing, they were caught unawares. Well, not unawares. They just didn't do anything. Basically, when Xavi was getting old and bad, they didn't do anything. They didn't really sign anybody. Luis Enrique came in, clean sweep, brought in Rakitic, and that helped. But Barcelona wasted a couple of seasons with Xavi as a declining force before really addressing the issue. And with Iniesta, they didn't address it at all until literally like halfway a year ago when they signed Coutinho. That was their attempt to address the Iniesta situation. And so they didn't really... You need to transition away. Real Madrid have shown, if anything, Real Madrid have shown us this year, is that you have to transition away from power very cleverly and very smartly and do it before the player falls off a cliff. And Madrid sort of did that with the players they signed, but they didn't actually play the players they signed and then just let their players, their star midfielders all just drop off. And they've been terrible this year. So Barcelona are looking at Sergio Busquets, 30 years old, will be 31 next season. They're looking at Pique, 31 years old, will be 32 in a month. Looking at, well, maybe not Messi so much, but those two, right?
Pillars going to replace Messi anyway.
Pillars of the team, right? And even Luis Suarez as well, to a degree. But those two, right? You've got to replace those two because they're going to fall off. And you need to do it before they fall off. Otherwise, it becomes hard. So you look at Frenkie de Jong, Isaiah Busquets, Matas de Ligt thereafter, same thing with Piqué. And then Rabiot and Todibo, the French young French defender thereafter. These are the other options, the cheap options, just like you said, to reduce the risk on the Dutch pair, the pressure on the Dutch pair. Rabiot's phenomenal, can do everything. His mum's a bit of an issue, his temper's an issue.
Well, 2018 for Rabiot was on the reserve list. He wasn't even in the France squad, but was on the reserve list and then refused to go on that.
Yeah.
So any chance of picking up a World Cup winner's medal just went out the window. Yeah. And then obviously with PSG, contract talks have descended into such chaos that now he's in an indefinite suspension of sitting on the bench.
I'm expecting him to be on loan at Everton or Watford within about three seasons.
I think
I think he's better than that.
He's good, but I think he's going to... I don't think Barcelona's the move for him in terms of he'll be in and out of the team. And then in 2-3 years' time, he won't have played much football again. He'll be unsettled.
I don't know why Man City aren't. If he's free or cheap, then it's obvious that they don't have anyone with even close to the same capabilities of Fernandinho, himself is 33. And Rabiot, again, is so versatile in midfield and has played as a number six, can play as box to box. that his physicalities and his qualities.
I'd say it's a bit of a red flag, though, really.
Yeah,
if he's looking at leaving on a free, and there's only one major European team coming in for him.
But the thing as well is also is if with the big European sides, if a player tends to, he's almost like he's declared for Barcelona. So that was like, what's the point? Plus, also red flag with his personality. PSG have a very terrible locker room culture. They don't appear to have any sort of sense of order or structure there. Look at what Neymar's been allowed to get away with. So I would imagine it. While obviously we shouldn't disavow and take the blame away from him. Obviously, let's see how he handles himself in a locker room that is more functional and more.
Yeah, but cohesive. What I'm saying is he did it. He's done it. He refused to be on the reserve.
Yeah, no, that was childish. France, so. That was childish.
But so Barcelona as well. If you're saying getting rid of players, Denis Suarez has been obviously linked to Arsenal.
Yeah.
Emery seems to like him. The reports that. I've seen and Damasio have reported that talks have begun. Barcelona don't want to sell now or don't want to loan now. They'd either sell now or wait. And Arsenal want him now but might not be able to afford him.
Yeah.
Just quickly on that, would that be a... If Ramsey, as we've mentioned, is going, Ozil's agent has said that his future is at Arsenal for the length of this contract, if not beyond... so it looks like he's staying.
It's a nice contract, man.
Exactly. But is Denis Suarez... Is that a clever purchase?
Yeah,
Someone that's not being used at Barcelona.
Yeah, I think he's a very capable player. He's kind of like Ramsey-ish in terms of his skill set and the level of play that he belongs at. He's sort of like a hybrid of Mkhitaryan and Ramsey in that sense. So I think it makes a lot of sense for Emery. Emery's worked with him before. He'll come in and play very well. He won't necessarily grouse about not starting every game, which is always useful when you've got a lot of players you want to incorporate in your attacking teams.
Do you think he would be a starter for Arsenal?
Not regularly. I don't think he'd walk in and demand a starting position. Or maybe he'd play his way into getting one.
Well, that's what I mean. Is he good enough to then?
He's good enough to. It's just a matter of if he does or not. Because it's always been about with Dennis. It's always been about can you produce the level of your talent?
Because first name terms.
Because we know, it's Suarez. It's already a Suarez of the Barcelona side. So with him, he's always had talent, immense talent. He was at City, obviously.
I was going to say,
he's always had immense talent. It's just about can you execute on that talent? And he does it way too infrequently for Barcelona. But at Arsenal, under Emery, less pressure, you would say, than at Barcelona. Mm. Could he then thrive? I think he could. He has the skills to do it.
Because obviously Ever Banega is constantly linked because of the Emery relationship there as well. Denis Suarez seems a smarter option based on Arsenal need to stop signing 30-year-olds to bulk up this experience.
Ever Banega is not consistent enough for Arsenal. And Arsenal have a very good young three central midfielders. They don't need another one. Mm. They need attacking players and defenders.
It'd be interesting to see where he plays Suarez because, I mean, personally, I've never really seen him as a wide player, but he played wide... when he played for Emery previously, and he seems to be sort of suggesting that he does view him as a wide man.
But the Arsenal wide man is not a wide. So Mkhitaryan plays as a tucked in playmaker.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why Ozil was played on the right because you're not fulfilling a winger's duties when you're playing there. That's all to do with the fullbacks, which Arsenal need to sign as well because they can't rely on two that are actually good at it. but yeah, you could see Denis Suarez being left footed, being plonked on that right wing. As such, and working in tandem with Ozil, then we'll get to play as a 10. Robbie can play on the left.
He's right footed.
Is he right footed?
Yeah. He's a bit two footed, but he's mostly right.
Oh, right.
But he plays well on the right. He did it for Villarreal when he was on loan there. He did it in the Europa League when he plays very well on the right. So you can see exactly where he fits into Emery's plans.
Yeah, playing on the right. It'd be a like for like for Mkhitaryan then if he's right footed as well. I thought he might be a bit of an inversion. Someone else that's going to be bandied about this window is Timo Werner, obviously one of the Bundesliga's top talents and top strikers. 18 months left of his contract, so he doesn't fall into the same bracket as Rabiot and Ramsey as such. Mm. He commented at the end of 2018, saying that I've loved Leipzig, but if I want to stay in Germany, there's probably only one club, which we can assume is Bayern Munich.
That's a hilarious comment.
But Liverpool are linked. Obviously, selling Solanke, I mentioned earlier, is a striker that leaves. Should Liverpool do everything to tie Werner up?
It's a really difficult one for Klopp because it must be very tempting to consider splashing out because if Liverpool do end up losing the title and they have an injury or two up front, then the finger of blame is going to be pointed firmly at him. But then I don't think they're significantly weaker without Solanke. And they could probably get away without making an addition. But I think the chance of signing Timo Werner is too good to be missed, and they should go all out for him. But the player has ultimately got the decision. Like you say, he's got the chance to join and become potentially a poster boy of the new Bayern or get an immediate Premier League winners' medal. And it's history would suggest that he's going to tend to stick to what he knows, which is Germany. But yeah, I mean, Klopp's pulling power. Everyone wants to play for Klopp. And with that German connection, I think he should be going for it.
If you see, obviously, Liverpool are on course to achieve some great things. They're putting together a great side. But if you looked at a trajectory of career as a German player as well, perhaps it should be Liverpool first and then four seasons there, and then you get that Bayern move when you're in your peak of your powers and you just sweep up Bundesliga titles. Yeah,
Bayern don't have the purchasing power to buy someone from Liverpool, though. If Liverpool have a player and he's playing well and everything, I think there's only two clubs, probably three, that have the money and the pull to get someone out of Liverpool. If Liverpool have a player and he's playing well, I think if you're not Barcelona, Madrid, or PSG, you know, Bayern have shown before they're not willing to play.
Yeah, but they'll sign. Like, I know they don't spend much usually, but if Timo Werner is the best German striker, and he's playing well for someone, they'd probably, if they need a striker, they're going to at least inquire, aren't they? My point. And then Timo Werner will be like, okay, yeah, I do.
But I think also you look at the fact that Robin and Ribery are leaving in the summer. I think it's perfect.
Yeah, but they've got Gnabry, they've got Alphonso Davies coming in, they've linked with Hudson-Odoi.
Yeah, but I mean, you'd argue that Werner's further along than all of them. So he plays up front. Well, he could play up front. He plays up front in a team that plays transition football, fast football. Like, he plays possession football like Bayern. You play him on the wing. He plays well, like for Germany. There's options, basically. I think.
I think he would be really good for Liverpool because they're using Salah as the front man now, who is playing Werner would play up front. And although we've said that he's maybe not great up front on his own, Liverpool with Firmino doing a lot of your work as the striker and being so close.
If you're playing in transition as well, it's a whole different ball.
But then imagine if you get Salah back on the right, where he obviously still caused damage in a 4-2-3-1. He played a lot of that role for Roma. Then you have Mane, Werner, Firmino and Salah. And as good as Shaqiri's been, that would be pretty tasty for at least next season, or at least just rotation.
Because
if they don't play Salah up front now, they don't have the same. They've got no one that plays how he plays up front. No one with that electric pace. Mane, they could try there, but it would be different. I don't think he's as consistent.
I mean, Liverpool don't have too many sort of glaring weaknesses in their squad. Not that that is a glaring weakness, but you know they're looking at it now. They're top of the Premier League. One or two signings could be the real difference between sort of ramping home that advantage. Yeah, especially when you look at City, you're probably going to sign a few players, aren't they?
Yeah, but I think they need
City need a left back, man, like post haste. But yeah, I would agree. I think for Liverpool, he makes a ton of sense. If I had Liverpool, I'd push out the boat to get him because he's young, phenomenally talented, fits the system perfectly, can play three positions, and what more do you want? he'd be a great fit with Liverpool. He's a great young player. You know, it makes sense. I'm just thinking from his perspective. I'm thinking, like Sam said, I think maybe he'll be like, "Oh, Bayern is the expected career for me. It's nice. I'll probably get to take over from Ribery or Robin to get one of their shirt numbers
or Lewandowski
or Lewandowski. Well, ooh.
I imagine he wants to be a number nine.
Oh yeah, I just meant taking the number 10 or 7. I didn't mean take actually, like, you know,
because that opportunity isn't going to roll around too often.
Yeah,
like once they've replaced Lewandowski, they will have replaced him for five, 6 years.
You can imagine they'll identify someone that's pretty hot to go there. Yeah, the one final talking point of January transfers looks to be a continuation of the saga that defined the summer in Mourinho's quest for a centre back. Do you think that Solskjaer is going to be in the ears of Ed asking for someone to bring in?
They need someone, don't they? I mean, Victor Lindelof.
Manolas is supposedly a target for next season. The centre-back everyone wants is Koulibaly, but I don't see Napoli selling him
in January.
So do Man United just wait? Do they sort of put everything on the burner and plan for a full summer? Or do you think they need desperately to add someone in January?
I think you need someone. If you watch Phil Jones is not good. Chris Smalling is not good. Eric Bailey is really good, but his talent, his confidence is completely shattered. I don't know if you can rely on him. Marcus Rojo is adorable and wonderful and fun, but not very good either. Victor Lindelof is very good. Victor Lindelof is excellent. Top 10 in the league, centre back, very, very good.
That's a transformation.
Finally, well, he always had the talent. He looked bereft of confidence. Now he's got the confidence. He's playing brilliantly again. But he needs someone next to him. And Koulibaly is for me the obvious choice because he's playing on the left, which means Lindelof can play on the right. But you know, how do you get Napoli to sell mid-season? I don't think you can.
That's what I'm saying. It's probably worth waiting for summer.
But I think you've got to look for a cheap one. I think you've got to look for someone solid. I don't know who. I haven't thought about it really, but someone solid that you can bring in.
That's the point, though, isn't it? There's no one that's, unless you're getting Gary Cahill on loan for six months.
Well, it's not Gary Cahill, but you know.
But it's not just the case of the player being a stopgap. Because they've gone for the caretaker manager, that's the stopgap as well, isn't it? So if you're a player who's potentially signing, then you're speaking to Solskjaer or, you know, whoever it may be, in 6 months down the line, they've got a new manager. If he doesn't fancy you, then you're on the bench.
Maybe you get someone on loan.
All of Ireld's contract's been triggered,
which
now presents a 25 million transfer clause to be activated.
I think that means he's leaving in the summer, because otherwise, why would you, you know?
But they could activate that now.
Can they?
That contract extension triggers it, and then it runs out at the end of the...
So they can activate
the clause. It runs out a week before. I'm pretty sure this is correct, and how it's been worked out is... It will expire a week before the transfer window ends in the summer, so that they don't just get rushed final day.
Yeah. So it's expired. So okay. Yeah.
So from my knowledge, it you can activate it now. Whether it only becomes available in the summer, I'm not too sure. But that seems like something. If you know you can get 25 million from the summer, do you just say 30 million now to get him if it's not completely there? And you say you're getting 5 million.
He's
bonus,
the guy, clearly. I mean, if you look at they clear out the number 5 shirt for him, got Rojo onto the 16. So it's like he's obviously phenomenal. He's a brilliant centre back. He'd be a good partner for Lindelof. That'd be a very good duo. You could always try and rehabilitate Eric Bailey, but I don't know. He might be too far gone with that one. You look at, he really looks bereft.
Yeah.
I'd probably say Alderweireld would count as a stopgap. He's sort of been on
he's
the slide,
isn't he? As
yeah,
well,
he's aging. I mean, Man United have obviously been burned with Sanchez. That might make them sort of think twice about going for another player.
Then I think Sanchez injury, and already he's playing a couple of little nice passes. Might be invigorated.
Yeah, he'll take a while.
Koulibaly and Alderweireld would be a pretty nice. if Man United ended up with that come the end of this summer, that'd be pretty good.
Maybe you just pick someone up on loan, someone who you know is reliable.
Is what I mean. Yeah. That's easy to say, but Gary Cahill looks like the only guy that you get like that. So centre back, just sort of one word verdict. Do you think it's necessary to bring someone in now?
Absolutely. Otherwise, you're not making Champions League.
And then, Sam, do you reckon they need it now?
They definitely need someone, but whether they can get someone in the caliber they want.
My verdict for anyone that's interested is would be you sit back and have almost caretaker role in everything, and then you just go big for Koulibaly, who's arguably one of the best in the world now.
Could always recall Twanzebe from loan, I suppose.
Yeah, that would be the ultimate stopgap, getting someone in, and he's impressing for Villa. So the final section, though. Obviously, FA Cup's happened, but don't forget about the Carabao Cup, and we're going to pay it due testimony by giving it 2 minutes at the end of the podcast. Quickfire predictions. It's obviously quite interesting because we have Spurs-Chelsea, which is pretty tasty. Spurs, obviously, as we said, Pochettino's got a chance here to get a couple of trophies if we're making them one of the favourites for the FA Cup.
Spurs-Chelsea's a very tasty fixture.
And then Man City Burton is the other one.
Not tasty at
which
all.
Which is, well, it's potentially fun, but it's you could see another 7-0 turnaround.
If you've ever been to McDonald's, right, and you're ordering for your kid, there's an option for you order burgers, right, and you can order Happy Meal burgers. And one of them is cheeseburger, one of them is hamburger, and one of them is plain cheeseburger, just a burger and cheese, and then the buns, nothing in it. And that's this match.
That sounds delicious.
It's just absolutely plain. It's going to be so boring. They're going to win like 5-0. And it's like, yeah, all right, whatever.
Burton they've beaten higher ranked opposition in 3 of the 4 seasons in League Cup ties. Aston Villa, Nottingham Forest and Burnley. Yeah, who are on the same level as Man City. I think to not take the mickey too much, massive for Burton to get in there, but the one drawback is they're still two-legged semi-finals, aren't they?
Yeah.
So that just
first leg at the Etihad is going to be such a big ask. I mean, they've warmed up for it sort of perfectly. They battered Rochdale at the weekend, 4-0. But
serve that up again.
I mean, they've
rinse and repeat.
They've punched above their weight with Nigel Clough in charge. But yeah, I really just can't see it.
Yeah. So for this week, not the actual ties, but so we've got Spurs at Wembley, I guess. I don't know if they've decided to go somewhere else for this week. Spurs-Chelsea, what's the score for this week? And then you can just tell me who's going to get through as well.
2-1, Spurs are going to go through as well. But 2-1, they're going to win today. Today, tomorrow, Wednesday?
Just whenever you're listening.
Yeah, it's true.
Time in podcast world is not a concept. So 2-1 Spurs, what about Man City-Burton?
5-0 Man City, cool. And they're going to go through, obviously.
I think 3-1 Spurs with Son to play another starring role, yep. And Spurs to go through, and Man City to win 4-0.
Oh, so sorry, Burton. I think your race has run, and the Squawker Talker podcast race has run for this week. Obviously, we've got a whole year of podcasts to come, and I'm sure Mo will be on more of them. But thank you for today's one.
And hopefully I will not be ill on more, yeah, of them. So,
well, I think you I think talking a bit about Rabiot perked you up a bit. You seemed a bit glum at the beginning, but you grew into it, as we knew you would. And right. Sam, expecting you on as well. A couple more guests. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks a lot.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to us. And join us next week for another Squawker Talker.